resources so that we can hear Senate Bill 832. I'll give Senator Walker a chance to talk about her bill and then get on to her own committee, and I'm sure others will join us very shortly. Go ahead, Senator Walker.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, members of the committee. I appreciate you taking this bill out of order. I'm supposed to be in judiciary, so I'll run up there shortly. Senate Bill 832, you have before you the Dash 3 amendments. Your committee administrator can explain those to you. And I also have given you a copy of a memorandum from the Department of Fish and Wildlife issued on January 29th that explains what our problem is, and I'll go over that in a moment. I do want you to recognize that the sponsors of this bill are myself and Senator Beyer. Let me assure you that it is a miracle that the two of us are sponsoring a bill about trapping animals, because we see it differently on many of those issues. I invited him to be a part of this bill because no one would believe that I was sponsoring a bill on trapping animals. So with that, let me explain to you how this bill came about. We got a call from some constituents who are here today with Swanson Pest Control indicating that the Department of Fish and Wildlife had told them they would no longer be able to trap animals in the city limits unless the city passed an ordinance, and we're talking nuisance animals. Apparently this came out of a court ruling, and so we decided that this needed to be addressed, and Kelly Peterson and Martin Taylor are here, and they're going to explain it to you, and Terry Witt is also here. And let me tell you that this is a carefully brokered agreement, and it's not about killing bears, cougars, swans, or any of those other things, even though the relating clause relates to wildlife. What we are attempting to do is, the court ruling indicated, and in the memorandum that you have, on page 2 of that memorandum down at the bottom in paragraph 4, it explains to you ORS 498.158, and says that unless the problem wildlife situation falls into one of the categories outlined above in section 3, taking wildlife is generally prohibited within city limits. And then on page 3, it outlines for you that before anyone can hunt or trap within the boundaries of any city, public park, or any school, the following two fixes must be in place, and that's why we're here today. One, the governing body, typically a city council, must pass an ordinance or resolution authorizing such activity, and the commission must review the ordinance or resolution and determine that it will not adversely affect public safety or unreasonably interfere with other authorized uses of the land. There are only four cities that have done that. That would be Warrenton, Klamath Falls, Bend, and Cottage Grove. And a good senator from Cottage Grove just left the room, but his city did do that. Rather than taking a piecemeal approach city by city by city across the state, we decided it was appropriate to authorize this from the legislature. Again, I indicate to you that this was a very carefully brokered agreement. Ms. Peterson came to me after the Dash 3s were prepared, wanted an additional amendment to clarify something about the task force. I refused. Terry Witt wanted another amendment. I refused. I think that we are at the point where we've settled all the issues. It's pretty clear. Also in the bill, in the amendments, we're setting up a task force that will look at these issues in the future. And I'll actually let the other parties present explain what the task force is going to do. I'm just simply here to tell you that I appreciate the opportunity to bring this bill forward, and I think we've got something that we can work with and that all the parties agree to.
Okay. There's little sense in me asking if there's any questions, since half of my committee that was here left.
Yes. It's a little bit of like talking to myself in the shower, Senator.
Well, at least you don't get quite so much argument. You know? I'm sure Senator Corcoran will be back. I know he was running after some stuff. And Have we checked to see if Senator Fisher and Senator Beyer are around, or?
Mr. Chair, I know that Senator Beyer was in his office because his office is next door to mine, but he may be tied up this morning. I have discussed this bill with him very carefully as we moved along with the amendments. He agreed to the Dash 3 amendments the last time I spoke with him, so I suspect that he is still on board with the amendments. But if you have any further questions, I would just ask you to ask the certified smart people behind me who will testify, and hopefully by then you'll have some committee members.
Okay. Thank you.
All right.
Appreciate you coming this morning.
All right. Thank you.
I'll do my best to hold forth.
All right. Here. Thank you. The problem here in the Senate when we have small committees.
Here's Senator Fisher. This is good.
Sorry, boss.
That's okay.
Our local troops are restless.
I see. Well, what we've done, Senator Corcoran was here a minute ago. I opened as a subcommittee, and Senator Walker has made a few statements about Senate Bill 832, which she describes as a carefully brokered deal. And Judith, is there anything that you wanted to add, kind of to fill in Senator Fisher for a minute?
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Senator Fisher, Senate Bill 832 is the measure that allows a person to take wildlife that is a public nuisance or public health risk on land that the person owns or occupies. Now, we do have the Dash 3 amendments. You'll see a pile at the dais there. You'll see the Dash 3 amendments as well as the Hand and Gross version of those amendments. Those amendments, you'll see, insert definitions of damage of non-game wildlife and of public nuisance. It declares that nothing in Section 2 of the bill prohibits the use of bait or dogs for the taking of black bears or cougars specifically relating to the taking of wildlife that is causing damage. It does create a task force on wildlife control activities. It specifies that the State Fish and Wildlife Director will appoint the task force who are to represent nuisance animal control businesses, local governments, and wildlife conservation organizations.
Okay.
On the amendment, the Dash 3 amendment, you'll see on page 2, line 12, you'll see a description of the purpose of the task force. It does direct that the Department of Fish and Wildlife will, in fact, staff the task force. It prohibits the compensation of members of the task force. And the task force is to report by October 1st, 2004, with the repeal of these statutes in December 31st, 2004. It would declare an emergency effective on passage. In addition to the amendment in the Hand and Gross version, we have received a no revenue and a no fiscal impact on the Dash 3 amendments. Thank you, Mr. Chair.
Thank you, Judith. I'm just going to stick with my short little list. This is so nice to have after Monday's four-page long witness list. Terry Witt has signed up first, and give him a chance to hold forth for a few minutes.
Thank you, Chair Shields and members of the committee. My name is Terry Witt, Executive Director of Oregonians for Food and Shelter, and with me is Terry Brandt from Swanson Pest Control in Eugene. I'll be very, very brief. A problem arose as a result of some interpretation of changes to the trapping statutes that created a very serious hole with regard to animals causing damage to private property within city limits. In essence, what happened was that any fur-bearing animals, primarily raccoons, opossums, skunks, those kinds of animals that were causing damage to non-agricultural, non-forestry properties could not be controlled with the wildlife statutes that we had. And this was creating some significant problems within residential urban communities. That really was the genesis of saying we need to fix this. It is an emergency, particularly in light of the fact that with spring coming around, it is the season for breeding and raccoon problems that happen in residential homes and things of that nature. And that was really the start of the whole process. And thanks to Senators Beyer and Walker, a bill was drafted, which provided the basis for crafting the Dash 3 amendments. We had great participation from the lovingly referred to critter getter folks, in other words, the animal control folks in the both in the city of Portland, Eugene, the coast, east side. We also had great involvement from, as was mentioned, from Kelly Peterson with the Humane Society, and also with from Martin Taylor representing the Sierra Club. ODF&W was involved from the very onset, from Director Lindsey Ball through Roy Ellicker, Ron Anglin, and Larry Cooper. So we had a very, I think, a very complete and rather extensive list of folks that have been working towards a common ground. And I think the Dash 3 amendments represent that common ground. And as Senator Walker mentioned, I think there are some very, very small tweaks that a number of us would perhaps like to see put in the bill, but they're not necessary, and to avoid any appearance of trying to undercut the greater good. I think we all have agreed that the Dash 3 amendments, as written, will do the job and not create any additional problems or holes. There were a number of issues that were raised with regard to certain activities surrounding or at that are a part of animal control within the urban environment, rather than get into debates about that. While the session is underway, we elected to meet in a task force type of atmosphere and discuss those at length over the interim. And if changes to the law or rules need to be promulgated to put those into effect, then we will come back the next legislature and make those recommendations. I know a number of legislators don't like to overuse the task force tool, but I think in this case it's very important to expedite this process, because the longer we sit, the longer folks like Terry here are sitting on the sidelines waiting for the laws to be changed so they can go out and control these animals that are causing damage in the urban environment. And with that, I'll be glad to answer any questions. I asked Terry to come up with me simply just to talk if there are any questions about the need for this statutory change. Terry is the individual that actually has to deal with these critters in this Eugene Springfield area.
Jared, do you want to? Excuse me. Your name again?
Terry Brandt. I'm with Swanson.
Terry's just got me confused.
Yeah, Terry and Terry here.
Wait a minute. He's Terry. Did you have a couple comments you wanted to make quickly?
My comment would be only that, forgive me for my lack of protocol here, Senator Shields and committee. My comment would be that I would simply ask you to look at this very carefully, because we have a situation where probably 7 of 10 calls we get about animal problems, and when they come to us, they're a crisis situation.
Mm-hmm.
Seven of ten we can't deal with. And that is simply the way the laws are written. If you were to call me and say, I have a problem, I've got this horrendous odor in my house, and I've discovered that raccoons have went underneath my deck and ripped open a crawl space den and have now are residing underneath my house. There's nothing I can really do for them. They're stuck with the problem under the current laws. Fortunately, because the way the laws, in my opinion, the way the laws are written, are for damage basically to land, not and property, agricultural crops, so on and so forth. Over the years, they've been kind of interpreted to homes and things like that, but that's been challenged, unfortunately. Maybe it's fortunate because at this point we're coming to a point where we're recognizing there is a specific problem with private property also, because your dwelling is not, as I understand it, in the law today, it's not, your dwelling's not covered. And a prime example of that would be I have an ongoing problem with a home right now, and it's cost the owner of the home, who's a contractor, it's a rental, but it's cost him over $4,000. Raccoons went underneath the home. They ripped down the insulation on the inside of the home. They broke water pipes. They actually took some old iron sewer pipes and ripped those down. Raccoons are quite strong. They're, you know, old iron pipes, if you know what I'm talking about, are pretty, they're pretty rusted out. So in their exuberance, they ripped some pipes loose and caused quite a problem underneath the house. So that is actually not addressed in the law today, and this is the purpose of this nuisance law, is to introduce the type of language that would give homeowners the opportunity to deal with a problem like that. The other would be, I would ask you to put this picture in your mind. At 2:30 in the morning, you hear a ruckus in your kitchen. You get up in your pajamas, bare feet, and trod to the kitchen and turn the light on and discover there's two raccoons sitting on your kitchen counter with the cupboard doors open, ripping boxes of cereal open, and because they're looking for food. Now, it just so happens the gentleman left his pet door unlocked. And a pet door is one of the ones where it swings and your dog comes and goes as they need to do their thing outside. So those are the type of issues that cannot be dealt with under the current law. So
what would you do with those two raccoons sitting under current law?
Well, he took a broom and got his wife up, and they've got five small kids, and they opened the patio door, and after 10 minutes finally got the raccoons out the door. That's what happened, but they keep coming back. So it's a situation where I cannot deal with it. There's no law on the books for me to remove the raccoons because they're causing damage to a structure or personal property, and it's not in the laws.
Terry, Senator Walker mentioned more than once that this was a carefully brokered deal. You think this will stay the way it is if it moves from here to the House side and everybody's on board with it?
Senator Shield, members of the committee, that has been our instructions to fellow lobbyists in the building. Keep your hands off of it. And yes, that would be our intent, is to move this through as is.
Great.
Mr. Chair, what about this attractive relating clause?
That's why I asked the question, Senator Beyer. Something comes back, it's all messed up. I would think we'd have a hard time concurring on this side.
Senator Shields, Senator Beyer, I think one of the things that I had done was, I think you saw the copy of the letter that I had issued to you and also to Kelly Peterson, basically stating that should this be changed and in any way used as a mechanism to get at that issue, that we would oppose it, and we would, if it ever made it through the process, including coming back for concurrence into the Senate, that we would ask the governor to veto it, because that is not our intent.
Yeah. Thank you. I do appreciate it. I mean, I understand this point that we're making this morning, and we're trying to address some wildlife that ends up inside the city, for instance, or in an area, and in your kitchen, on your counter. We're not trying to address, a bigger issue, you know. And yet, this is very important. So I'm just glad to have all that on the record.
Well, Senator Shields, there's been some interesting, stories that have come out of the animal control people, including things such as law enforcement people actually shooting damaged animals with 45 automatics in city limits and just basically blowing them to pieces. Those kind of activities definitely are not in the best interest of the public.
No.
And I think with regard to the issue of the relating clause, obviously the specific issue that you're making reference to are the Bear and Cougar statutes. And I think with regard to that particular sub-issue, there is another bill that is being debated currently in the legislature that is specific to that issue. And our intent is to keep these two totally separate. And
yes.
This is a very important statutory change for Oregon and for the animal control people in Oregon. And we in no way want to jeopardize this particular statute by mucking it up with Bear and Cougar issues.
I appreciate that so much. I mean, it's two issues, two bills, and
right. They
deserve separate debate, shall we say. Are there any other questions? I think I should. Senator Corcoran was here earlier, and I brought us this to order as a subcommittee and been joined by you fine gentlemen since, so I'll make sure that we're a full committee. Yes?
No, I was just curious because I think I would be tempted, if I were in a situation like that, to get a hold of a meat cleaver and a raccoon can go down the disposal and smoke.
Oh, boy. Well,
that paints a great picture.
That paints a bloody mess as far as I'm concerned. I think Terry has a better way. Let me just say that, okay?
We think it's a better alternative to have professionals come in than to allow citizens to potentially be put in a position where they have to violate the law.
Yeah,
Mr. Chair.
Yeah.
I guess my comment was on the stupidity of some of the laws. Some people seem to think are so necessary for their survival.
Well, I hope we're correcting a stupid oversight in this case. Any other questions? Next on my list is Gary Cooper from ODF&W.
For the record, my name is Larry Cooper. I'm the Deputy Administrator of the Wildlife Division for the Oregon Department of Fish and Wildlife. And I think Senator Walker did a good job of outlining this particular Senate bill, Senate Bill 832-3 with the three amendments, would streamline a process and allow landowners to respond more quickly to potential wildlife nuisance situations. It would provide the department with the authority to issue a permit to an individual landowner or to an animal control business acting on the landowner's behalf to remove those damaging nuisance wildlife. This is consistent with current process that we go through when a landowner is suffering damage to land, livestock, agricultural, forest crops. The Senate bill would also, as mentioned, create the task force. We believe this would be something that would be appropriate also. Excuse me, and that the appointment would be made by the Director of Fish and Wildlife Agencies and would be a fair representation of animal control businesses, local government, as well as wildlife conservation organizations. The department, as was mentioned, has been in close communication with Oregonians for Food and Shelter, the Humane Society of the U.S., as well as the animal control businesses, and we believe that this is a positive solution to a problem that currently exists. It would certainly offer those landowners an opportunity to respond to a problem that exists relative to nuisance causing wildlife, and that concludes my testimony. If you have any questions, I'd be glad to.
Any questions? Thank you very much for coming. Next on my list is Martin Taylor. Martin, welcome. Glad you're here this morning.
It's good to be here. Thank you. Senator Shields, members of the committee, for the record, my name is Martin Taylor. I'm here today representing the Sierra Club of Oregon. It's interesting what issues you end up learning a lot about in the course of this. I certainly didn't expect the Sierra Club of Oregon to spend a great deal of time paving the way for a nuisance trapping bill, but it was appropriate for us. Our members' interest in this bill was primarily that to the extent that trapping occurs, it's done in as humane a way as possible, and it's this bill represents a first step towards having some standards of practice in an industry that may ultimately have a licensing process, and we like that. We had a great experience in this process with folks from the industry, the nuisance trapping industry that we've worked with. I think they represent the high standards of professionalism that we would like to see in the industry, so we feel like this is a good step in that regard. I would say that we came into this process with a few concerns. One of those concerns is that there isn't in this bill an immediate licensing process. It will, in the first 2 years, be a task force that will try to establish some standards. And so with the emergency clause, this will open up for 2 years a practice of being able to nuisance trap in cities without those standards. It is an extension of trust on our part to assume that that can be done in a humane way. These are the industry representatives we've been working with have been good folks that demonstrate the ability to do that, but our long-term goal is not to have an environment without any standards. And so we see this task force as being very important. It's also was a concern that the task force be adequately balanced. I think with the testimony you just received from ODFW, they've indicated willingness to put together a balanced task force so that we can talk about things like what do you do with an animal after it's been live trapped, what are the appropriate times to live trap versus take an animal. I know we're talking about raccoons, but this is an industry that has pretty good track record of doing live trapping when possible, and we'd like to see that continue. Those are the kinds of issues that we come to the table with. And, of course, the other concern was the bear and cougar concern, which, as the bill was originally drafted, we probably would have taken, would have affected the existing bear and cougar laws. That was described as a drafting error, and it was a bill that was initiated by ODFW, so to that extent, the original language was initiated by ODFW, so to that extent they came and said, hey, you know, that wasn't what we were trying to get at. I think we've corrected that in the bill, but there were two places in statute that you could have addressed this problem. We're taking the path that puts us close to the Bear and Cougar Act, and of course that makes folks nervous in an environment where it's such a volatile issue. We just prefer to see those two separated. So again, there's an extension of trust on the part of the Sierra Club and the Humane Society to go forward with the bill connected to this part of statute that we won't end up having a bear and cougar fight over Senate Bill 832 at some future hearing. And having said all that, I have really enjoyed the experience of working with Terry Witt for the first time in my professional experience. I think he's done a good job of setting up some trust and some framework. I think his letter was very helpful. ODFMW has been extremely helpful in this process. I think we got to the place we are because people were willing and able to find a way to work together. But I think of all of the players in this process, the two that really deserve recognition are Senator Walker, who's been pretty firm with everyone that there will be a bill, but her bill will not get messed with, and Kelly Peterson, who has asked from the perspective of the Humane Society that's taking the lead on the Bear and Cougar bills to make all of these leaps of trust the very day that the Bear and Cougar bill was moving out of committee. Mm-hmm. I realize not all of you are in the same place with the Bear and Cougar bill, but you know, understand the level of paranoia from the position of the Humane Society that day was very high, and yet she was still willing to go there. So I think we need to see this as what we're trying to strive for in the process, for those places where you find a win-win solution. People come to the table, they're reasonable, they get past some of the inherent mistrusts, and we get a bill that in the end of the day is going to take care of a real problem that some people have, which is they have mammals that cause them problems. They wake up to raccoons, and they don't have a solution to that raccoon problem. Well, as a result of this bill and the trust that it demonstrates, there'll be a solution. So with that, I'm open for questions, or I'm ready to take a walk.
Are there any questions? No. Thank you, Martin. I still have one more, and that's Mike Marshall from Lincoln City. Welcome, Mike. We're glad you're here. Can you share with us your perspectives for a couple seconds?
Thank you, Senator Shields, and members of the committee. I appreciate the opportunity to say just a few words. I operate animal management, wildlife.
Put your name on the record. Just
Mike Marshall. I'm sorry. Operate a business called Animal Management Wildlife Control Services out of the Lincoln City area. And I also represent and speak on behalf of members of Oregon Wildlife Control Operators, and as regional director for the National Wildlife Control Operators Association. And we strongly support this bill. I think a lot of people have worked very hard at putting this together and done an excellent job of creating a very effective solution to the problem so that we can continue to help people resolve conflicts with wildlife. And also, we're very strong supporters of professional ethics in the business of dealing with wildlife control. And that's all I have.
Okay. Are there any questions? If not, thank you very much for coming. I'm going to close the hearing, and if it's okay, open a work session on Senate Bill 832.
Mr. Chair, I move the dash three amendments and do Senate Bill 832.
Senator Beyer moves the dash three amendments of Senate Bill 832. Is there any discussion? Is there any disagreement with doing that? Okay. So adopted.
Chair, I move Senator Beyer. Senate Bill 832 as amended to the floor with a due pass recommendation.
Senator Beyer moves Senate Bill 832 as amended to the floor with a due pass recommendation. Would you call the roll?
Senator Corcoran?
Aye.
Senator Fisher?
Aye.
Vice Chair Beyer?
Aye.
Chair Shields?
Aye. So Senate Bill 832 is moved to the floor with due pass. Do you want to carry it, or are you and Vicki together, or what do you want to do?
Doesn't matter.
For now, we'll just give it to you and let it go from there, okay? It's going to close a hearing on Senate Bill 832. And where are we going next?
Okay. Got the guy, Vicki, carrying the record.
Yeah, we've got to give somebody a chance to catch up with Senator Walker on that carrying record thing. Which one are we doing? Okay, we'll open a hearing.
Put on the record that Kelly now has killed some animals so that all the chicken folks in the world will rest assured that she's not biased.
That's a bird-brained idea. But
okay.
I've been asked to announce that we're not going to do House Bill 2241. It's not necessary. That's being handled by another bill, and we are opening a hearing on 817.
Mr. Chair, members of the committee, if you'll remember, Senate Bill 817 requires the Environmental Quality Commission to direct the issuance of $10 million in general obligation bonds for pollution control. You have at your seat at the dais the dash one amendments as well as the hand engrossed version of those amendments. The dash one amendments specify that the department shall use the proceeds from the bonds to implement removal or remedial actions, including those to address mercury contamination from abandoned mine sites at the highest priority of abandoned mine sites posing a hazard to human health or the environment. The dash one amendments also specify that the bonds may be used to fund the orphan site account only to the extent that debt service from the bonds issued shall be fully paid by fees collected for the orphan site program and other funds approved by the Legislative Assembly. And finally, it directs that the department report to the legislature by January 1, 2005 regarding the hazards posed by abandoned mine sites and the department's actions and plans for removal and remedial actions at those highest priority sites, including actions and plans necessary to address mercury contamination. We have a potential revenue impact statement as well as a potential fiscal impact statement issued, Mr. Chair. We will, it's my understanding from the President's office and from fiscal, that we will need to send this to Ways and Means. Thank you, Mr. Chair.
So we're sending this to Ways and Means. Nobody has signed up to testify, but I'm going to ask Bob Danko to come up first. Maybe we want to put this back over there.
Yeah, there's another one.
There's another one, another list over there. Go ahead, Bob.
Good morning, Mr. Chair, members of the committee. I'm Bob Danko with the Department of Environmental Quality. If you'd like, I'd like to walk through the amendments briefly that Judith just described to you, because We would like to do those, which would put the bill in a shape that we think is implementable. Of course, it all depends on money, and we know there isn't any money, but I guess I'm a believer that you have to be at the right place at the right time, and this bill would get us at least in the position to do well. So would you like me to walk through what we've proposed here? Actually, the key change to the bill, I think, and we've worked this out with Oregon Environmental Council, and Matt Blevins is here today, is the language allows us to use any of the monies on mine sites if they're high priority for cleanup, but may not be related to mercury contamination. Of the five or six mine sites that we really feel we need to work on, one or two of those aren't related to mercury contamination. They're arsenic and copper and other heavy metals and acid mine drainage that are affecting water quality. The way the bill was written, it would have limited us only to deal with mercury mine sites. We agree the mercury contamination is a high priority for us, but we also think that if another mine site is causing environmental problems that really need to be addressed, that we would like to have that flexibility to do that. The other change that is important here is how the legislative report that was required of us to do is framed, and we've altered that language some, so it's more in line of the work that we would be doing anyways to prioritize these mine sites. So we're trying to minimize the fiscal of having to do this legislative report that the bill called for. So there's new language in the type of information we'll provide to the legislature. I think it meets the intent of the drafters and the intent of getting the legislature the right information. It just frames it in a way that won't add a workload to us. Those are the two key changes in the amendment that has been brought forward.
Okay. In other words, this puts you in a position to do some good things if you ever get some money to do them with. Is that
correct, Mr. Chair? I'd just like to add, the consideration that this committee has done on this bill in the past may be starting to pay dividends. I've been talking to representatives in Senator Gordon Smith's office, for instance, who I guess one of their staffers was in the building and heard from I'm not sure which one of you legislators, but heard from a legislator or two that this abandoned mine contamination is a big problem, and we could use some help from the federal level, and there may potentially be some help there. And it was just the idea of presenting it here and talking about it here made that connection there, and that's what I'm hoping with this bill. If we can move it to Ways and Means, again, it'll allow an opportunity to talk about it and eventually maybe end up with a good result to address some of this contamination.
I have one question, and I want you to tell me the flaw in my logic, if there is one. Among all these streams by which a mine goes, there's a mine sitting there and a stream's going by, and you've obviously got some contamination in it. Have you measured in the past the level of toxicity, the mercury or whatever, in that mine? And as a part of this, if you clean up a mine, a particular one, you ever get some money and you decide to attack one source or one stream, will you be able to then, within a year or two, measure the mercury level again and see if it's really dropped and measure the outcome that you're trying for? Is that possible to do that? Or, when I first heard about this bill, I said, gee, for a smaller amount of money, maybe you could do one as kind of a pilot and demonstrate that you're able to do this. Is that logical? Or
Mr. Chair, it's a very logical question and a good one. And I like to put it into a phased looking at it. When you clean up a mine site, you will definitely affect or clean up the impact on the stream that is near that mine site. And And the farther you get away from that mine site, the longer it's going to take to see the improvement. And, for instance, we can clean up the five or six mines that we'd really like to clean up now, and we should be able to demonstrate it'll take longer at some points than others, because sometimes the contamination is resulting from water that has gone into the ground and then has entered the stream through groundwater. Other times it's a surface water flow. If it's a surface water flow, it corrects a lot quicker than if it's a groundwater flow. But the impacts downstream, the farther you get away from the mine, the harder that's going to be to demonstrate. As we talked before, there's a lot of natural mercury in the environment, for instance, and so cleaning up a mine site next to Senator Corcoran's area there may not show up vividly when we look at the levels in the Willamette River, down towards Portland. But nearby, we should be able to demonstrate what you're describing.
Okay.
Mr. Chair.
Yes, Senator Fisher.
What I'd like to know is, what have you done so far to identify the mines as a real problem? Have you done a lot of sampling upstream of the mines and below the mines and all that kind of stuff?
Mr. Chair, Senator Fisher, the mines that we feel need to be cleaned up, we have done some of that. In some cases, we haven't done probably as much as we would like to, partly for cost reasons and other things. But I think we can show the impacts of the mines where we propose to clean them up. And if we can't show that, what you're describing, then we wouldn't be out there trying to clean them up. I can get you the specifics on the mines if you'd like.
Yeah, Mr. Chair, the reason I wondered is because of some of the so-called nitrate problems in streams that were blamed on farmers and ranchers and people like that, and find out it's natural contamination, not human-caused contamination. And I've got a pretty good feeling that there's an awful lot of that down there. There's just the natural mercury content in the area.
And the point that you make is that you don't want to spend money to clean up a mine when when it's not really the contributor, but it's a natural occurring kind of thing. So there would be good reason to have some testing upstream and downstream before you proceed too far. Any other questions? Thank you, Bob. Matt, did you want to comment on the bill very quickly? Is there anybody else that wanted to comment on 817?
Chair Shields, members of the committee, for the record, Matt Blevins, Legislative Affairs Director with the Oregon Environmental Council. As Bob had said, we've worked with them on these amendments. We're willing to accept these amendments because we feel like it'll help to move the bill forward. Again, we would still feel want to emphasize that we feel like the mercury mines are something that should be focused on, but understand the kind of flexibility that DEQ wants, so are willing to move forward with these. And then just remind the committee that we think this is sort of a good step to take and something that could position us down the line, as Bob was saying as well, that in the end, if we don't do this, it may end up costing the state a lot more to clean up down the line. So we think that the more we can move forward on this, the better. So,
have you, as a council, ever done any kind of work that's proactive in terms of actually doing the kind of testing upstream and downstream of what we were just talking about of any particular site?
We haven't done that. I mean, generally, we don't do that type of on-the-ground type of work. We've done some other work working with, for example, auto shops to try to recover mercury switches. So we've done some of that kind of stuff. But we haven't done any of the sort of the on-the-ground work trying to test water, okay, things like that.
I just was wondering.
Yeah.
Are there any further questions this morning? If not, I'm going to close a public hearing on Senate Bill 817 and open a work session on 817. You're not interested in doing anything on it?
I'm not either.
Okay. Well, we're
keep working on it. That's still $10 million in bonds.
Okay. We won't.
That people can't get medication to keep them alive. I'm not interested in spending $10 million on this.
Well, we should have paid attention to the budget earlier, probably.
My perspective on it is simply that this doesn't spend any money. It just puts them in a position where if we ever get some money, we can do something.
Mr. Chair, the $10 million bonds is still in that bill with those amendments.
Well, we will not proceed at the moment. We'll have more conversation and see if we can get anywhere. I thought that there was more of an understanding than that. My apologies and my mistake. If that's the case, we do have Senate Bill 196 before us. I'll open a hearing on Senate Bill 196. Judith is out of the room at the moment, so let me just begin with some folks that I do know have worked out an agreement on this bill. So let's ask John Ledger and Bob Danko if they'll come up here and speak to us a few minutes about Senate Bill 196. It's good to have both of you here. We know that you've done the work on this bill, so could you tell us what you've been doing?
Mr. Chairman, members of the committee, John Ledger with Associated Oregon Industries, and you have in front of you some -3 amendments. And I'll just briefly give you a synopsis of what these do. They only deal with one part of the bill, and that is the part of the bill that establishes a fund for technical assistance and also allows DEQ to get some of that funding. And that's the only part of the bill that's affected by these amendments. What it does, the amendments do, is they keep the fund intact. It is created. However, the fund is capped at $250,000 per year of penalties going into the fund. So it's a cap on amount going into the fund of $250,000. Any amount that would go above that spills into the general fund. So if there was a very, very large penalty levied, a certain amount of that would go into the fund, and what would cause the fund to go over that amount spills into the general fund. The DEQ can use some of that money for administrative and personnel costs, 15%. And the rest of the money is made available for technical assistance that the DEQ would oversee. And there are provisions put in the bill that allow for that. Actually, I think the term is other activities related to technical assistance, so they could provide for contracting or whatever they need to do to provide that type of technical assistance. We did have some conversations with legislative counsel about putting an appropriation in this amendment, and it was felt that at this point probably the best thing to do is just establish the account, put a cap on the account, how much can go into the account in any given year, and then have the bill go down to Ways and Means, and Ways and Means can appropriate out of that amount what it sees fit. And the amount that's in here, which is $250,000 a year cap going into the account, easily accommodates the $350,000 that DEQ was seeking a biennium to have pulled out of the account. So it allows for that plus a little extra because it's going to go up and down depending on what occurs. So what these amendments address, a lot of concerns. They address the concern about penalty money being used for staff. They address the concern about maintaining technical assistance, especially to small businesses. They address the concern about administrative costs for the agency and oversight of the fund, which I think is important. And it also allows it to go down to Ways and Means where it can be merged with the rest of the budget. I think overall this produces a better bill than what we had in the first place, and I wanted to thank the members of this committee, and especially Senator Shields and Senator Beyer, for helping us get to this point. I think it's a good solution.
Questions? Bob, did you want to comment?
Mr. Chair, I would just endorse what John has said. We worked together on it, and I appreciate your cooperation.
Okay. And this one will obviously move from here down to Ways and Means. I guess Matt has signed up as well to do testimony. Is that right, Mr. Blevins? Is there anybody else that wanted to comment on the bill this morning? Why don't you guys just stay there, Matt, make a few comments.
Chair Shields, members of the committee. For the record, Matt Blevins, Legislative Affairs Director with the Oregon Environmental Council. I guess we see this as a compromise that's going to help to move this bill along, which we think is a good thing. Obviously, we think this program needs the resources it came to ask for under this bill. I guess the only things we would say is that we're a little frustrated that we felt like there was a compromise that was brokered before we came to this session, and we thought that was a good one. We hoped that one would have gone forward. We still have concerns with this new compromise that there's still a concern about whether or not the program is going to have the full resources it needs to do the job it's been asked to do. And that's still unclear in terms of how that's going to play out because there isn't the clear dedication of funds at this point. But we feel like this at least is going to help us to go forward. So we hope the committee can do that.
Okay, thank you. It's my understanding we've got to do the dash ones and the dash threes. Is that correct? And so... Judith, is there anything that you want to add to all of this?
No, Mr. Chair, except to say that we did have the dash ones before us the last time. The dash ones set the annual hazard waste generation fee at $110 per metric ton during a single year and sets the maximum waste generation fees paid in 1 year at $27,500. I will note we do have a subsequent referral to Ways and Means.
Okay. No more questions, right? If not, did we open this as just a hearing, or did we open this as a work session?
Let's close the hearing
and open the work session on Senate Bill 196.
Mr. Chair?
Yes.
Move the dash one amendments in the Senate Bill 196.
Okay. Senator Beyer moves the dash one amendments for Senate Bill 196. Is there any discussion? Is there any opposition?
I oppose it.
Okay. The dash one amendments?
Yep.
Okay. In that case, would the clerk call the roll?
Senator Corcoran?
No.
Senator Fisher?
Aye.
Lester Beyer?
Aye.
Chair Shields?
Aye. The dash one amendments have been adopted.
Mr. Chair?
Yes.
I move the dash three amendments in the Senate Bill 196.
Is there any discussion of the dash three amendments in 196? Is there any opposition to the dash three amendments?
I object.
Okay. Did you want to discuss your objection?
Yeah, I think I'd echo Matt's comments that there was a deal brokered and then AOI comes in and changes the deal. I just object to that kind of behavior.
I have some concerns too, but I'm very concerned about them getting their I don't want to do something that ends up ultimately messing up the hazardous waste, you know, systems.
You got the votes, right?
If I could say something real, very briefly.
Okay, go ahead.
What you got back today from LC, you saw it when we saw it, pretty much. And it's not exactly what was sent into LC, but it's what came out of LC, because LC had concerns about the appropriations. This actually gives DEQ more money, potentially, than the first bill did, because the cap is bigger. The other thing is, this was both Bob and I shopped this around. This didn't come out of the blue as a fiat. That's just not the case.
Okay. Bob, you want to make a comment?
No, Mr. Chair.
Okay. I have to tell you, I had some of the same concerns as Senator Corcoran, but I also have some real concerns about hazardous waste, and especially technical assistance. It sounds like that's one of the key components of the whole thing. And I don't want this to go away. But I certainly understand Senator Corcoran's position and his concerns. With that, I'll ask for a roll call on the dash three amendments.
Senator Corcoran?
No.
Senator Fisher?
Aye.
Vice Chair Beyer?
Aye.
Chair Shields?
Aye. The dash three amendments are approved.
Mr. Chair, I move Senate Bill 196 as amended by the committee to the Committee on Ways and Means.
Is Senator Beyer moves Senate Bill 196 as amended with a do-pass recommendation and refers the bill to the Ways and Means Committee by kind of a prior reference that it already had. Could the clerk call the roll?
Senator Corcoran?
No.
Senator Fisher?
You really want nothing from him?
I don't care what you do, Bill. It's your vote, man.
It's all right.
Vice Chair Beyer?
Aye.
Chair Shields?
Aye. Senate Bill 196 is referred to the Ways and Means Committee. At this point, we managed to pass two and didn't get anywhere on the other one, but I'd be interested in a little further conversation down the line on Senate Bill 817. If some people can come back to myself and Senator Beyer and so on, I hate to see this idea just go away. That concludes the business that we have in front of us, and so the committee is adjourned.
Tony, what did that one for the Bartlett Green?